Welcome to Financial Wellness at Work, the only podcast devoted to sharing the stories of everyday employees who have transformed their financial lives by giving financial coaching a try.
Thank you so much for kicking off season three of Financial Wellness at Work. I'm Julie Everett, one of the financial coaches here at Financial Finesse, and I am here with Dan Andrews. He's one of our newest planners, and I can't stop myself from calling him Dan Drews. I don't know why that is. And we also have a visitor whose name is Jonathan. Jonathan, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much.
And Dan, how about you? Busy day today?
Busy day. Doing swell. Happy to be here.
So going back to Jonathan, you know, Jonathan checked in with us, I think it was a year and a half ago, and I just want to give him an opportunity to kind of introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, happy to. Yeah, super excited to be here with you both. So I'm from Los Angeles originally, technically Ventura County, but I just say Los Angeles because a lot of people don't know where Ventura County is. And it's been awesome. We grew up here, and then I moved up to the Bay Area for school, kind of lived in different parts throughout the country. And then we just moved back home, just had our first child about 7 months ago. So I'm a brand new parent. And yeah, I've always been super interested about money and finances in particular. And yeah, it's kind of like what got me so interested in this topic overall.
So that's great. I didn't know that about you, that you kind of always had that interest in money and finances. Where do you think that came from?
I think it came from a few different angles. So, I mean, honestly, like what was so surprising to me is that, for undergrad, I went to Berkeley, and there's some like pretty, there's like some pretty sharp people there, you know? And I was always struck by how little finance was talked about. Like there was like almost no mention of personal finance, especially in like high school. And then I went to UC Berkeley, and there was this one class taught by Fred Selinger. I don't know if he's still there, but it was all about personal finance and just like at a high level, credit cards and all this stuff. And I was a little bit too youthful to like really internalize the information. I was like 20 years old, 21. And so it's something that I didn't really like get into for a while post undergrad. And then it really just dawned on me like in my, let's say, very early 30s, I was like, I really want to get like a formal education in finance and personal finance in particular. And so I really leaned into it the last several years. But I think it was just like this early seed that was planted. And then I reminded myself of it a few years back.
What did you study there at Berkeley?
Philosophy. Yeah. So the furthest thing from finance or personal finance you could possibly study.
So then how did you get from philosophy into the tech space where you are now?
Yeah. So my career has been squiggly, I call it. So I was actually going to be a philosophy professor. Like I wrote a paper at Cambridge on philosophy and like race, and it was really kind of deep stuff. And then I realized that wasn't for me. I'm like a very people person, people oriented type of person. And so I decided like, okay, what's something that I could do? And this was right at like the height of the housing crash in 2007, 2008. And I actually went and taught with Teach for America. So I became a teacher. Long story short, to answer your question, I was in a bunch of different roles and then decided to go to business school in 2017. And so that was really like the pivot into tech and marketing and all that good stuff. But yeah, I've worn a lot of different hats throughout my career for sure.
That's awesome. So you start out in California, then you go into philosophy, then you make your way into the business world. What was it that prompted you to call us and start to really look at kind of your own opportunities?
Yeah, you know, I think really what triggered it is I'm someone that likes to learn independently and read things and watch videos and stuff. But I think what's the most invaluable learning lesson is like you read the thing, you watch the video or whatever, But then you come up with these questions that like naturally the video or the book can't answer. But then you go talk to like an expert, right? And then you could say like, hey, I don't understand this. Can you help me understand? So literally I had a book and I would read a chapter. I'd write down the questions that I still didn't understand after. And then I would call you all and be like, hey, I don't get this. You know, like, can you help me understand a bond ladder? I like still don't get that totally, right? And then the person would walk me through it. And then honestly, I think the origin too is my father-in-law is like very interested in personal finance and he and I would argue all the time. He's a boomer. And so we would argue all the time about like personal finance and the way like the economy shifted and all. And I was like, you know what? I gotta get smarter than him on this stuff. So that's what kicked it off.
So as a financial planner, I'm just like interested of what financial nuggets you've taught your father-in-law now, of like kind of what advice that we have given you or guidance that we've given you that you've then relayed to him and that's been a good experience.
Oh man, great question. Boy, there's a lot. I mean, so and trust me, I never miss an opportunity to educate him on something. So, you know, a couple of things. I think one, he would always get after me on like, oh, you know, you gotta invest in CDs and, you know, this, that, and the other. And I was like, yeah, I know, I've looked into it, but actually it's like much more tax advantaged for me to go with like T-bills, right? Because of the ways in which like my tax bracket is taxed and like I don't get the same benefits. Same with muni bonds. Like he was like, oh, muni bonds, you really got to like double down on muni bonds. I'm like, oh, actually, like the T-bill still, when I actually looked at my effective tax rate, it was still advantageous for me to stay in the T-bills. And then I think maybe like the biggest thing was just, I got a lot of clarity on like planning, like financial planning and like what my goals were and kind of explaining to him. I mean, he had some experience with like RSUs, but like sharing with him how those work and like how those are taxed and why people sell them immediately or not or what have you. So yeah, a bunch of stuff.
So I remember our conversation. It was a lot of fun. And something that you kept like asking was like financial optimization point of view. Like what is the best way to buy a house? Is now the best time? And like all these like kind of really financial questions. And then I would challenge you of saying, but what's the goal? What are the goals of Jonathan? What is the house that you're trying to form memories with your new family? Congrats, by the way. And so like, I just remember that kind of being a fun exercise of just as a philosophy major, a psychology enthusiast, what were your thoughts of like coming at me with financial optimization questions, but then being turned kind of in a different direction that ended up being a really fun conversation?
Yeah, it was a really fun chat. I think you've touched on something that I think is like a fairly broad anxiety for people in my age group, right? Where who aren't yet homeowners, where I think we often, you know, we're always thinking about like, how do we optimize to ensure that we're like doing all that we possibly can to set us up well to be homeowners in the future. And so I think what was helpful about our conversation in particular was getting back to this question of like, well, what is the goal? And so I also think that people over index on like, I just want to be a homeowner, period, like full stop. I'm just a homeowner. And like, that's it. That's the end of the story. But there's this really funny Chris Rock bit that he does. And he's like, I'm going to mess it up. But essentially, it's like, one of the worst things in life is to get into a bad mortgage. Like, that's like the worst thing, like avoid at all costs. And I've talked to so many people about this. And it's so true. You know, it's like, they don't do the math. They don't think about like what this mortgage will mean for their burn. And you know what I mean? Like all those things. And so especially the home environment that we find ourselves in currently, I mean, it doesn't make sense for us right now, but we're trying to do all that we can. But long way of saying, it was a really fun conversation because it made me reconsider what is the goal? Like what is the actual goal here beyond just home ownership?
Yeah, I feel like I have seen over the last couple of years, exactly what you just touched on there, Jonathan, that it's easy when a financial goal that you feel very sentimental about, like a lot of emotion, like buying a home. And especially when we saw the inventory of homes being so slim and people were buying up homes, like it was the last house that was ever going to become available. And then now they're looking at fewer family vacations or no family vacations, or, you know, just cash flow issues that they had never experienced before because they didn't consider the fact that I'm going to want to accomplish other things over the next 30 years than pay this house off. And this boulder of a mortgage payment is going to make all those things a lot tougher.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, and I also think it was the conversation that we had that helped me pull more into focus. Like, to your point, what's the trade-offs? Like, yes, you get the home, great, but it's more of like, what are the trade-offs for that? And like, what do you want your life to look like? And so, you know, again, this, I'm like very pro home ownership, to be clear, but I'm also pro not being stressed out by money.
I'm a big fan of that. So one thing that is unique, I think, about your relationship with Financial Finesse is, especially compared to the guests, some of the guests that we've had in the past who maybe had multiple years with one particular coach, you, on the other hand, have a very different approach. So you check in with Financial Finesse whenever you have a question. And Dan tallied it up. How many people has he worked with here?
I counted that he has chatted or called 13 different people, financial planners, which that means 13 different experiences, 13 different philosophies, perspectives. So I'm really interested to hear what Jonathan's point of view is of like what it's like to work with a whole bunch of different financial planners at Financial Finesse.
Yeah. So, gosh, I didn't realize it was that many. So I don't know if I should like apologize. I don't know. I don't have to apologize, but I'm like, gosh, that's a lot of people. So one thing that I found really interesting is that I think there's this conventional wisdom that finance is the hard science, right? It's like numbers, it's black and white. But actually, there's so much gray with regards to personal finance. And I also found that people just have their own biases, right? As they've like lived their lives and their experiences with personal finance, they're going to bring to the forefront either things that like burn them more so or less so, or you know what I mean? Like their angle to things. And so one of the reasons I wasn't totally wedded to one coach over another is that I just found different coaches' perspectives helpful. You know, like the way that you, Dan, might think about it would be potentially really different than another coach. And I actually found that to be the case. And I found that both in terms of like, because I always ask the coach, like, oh, what's your background? You know, all that good stuff. And I found that it was pretty different. Like, yes, I think there is some general best practice, right? But I actually think there's a ton of nuance that I gained from working from this cohort of coaches.
So if we go back a year and a half ago, how do you feel like whether it be your knowledge base, but I'm more interested in your confidence level when it comes to making financial decisions. How do you think that is different from a year and a half ago?
Gosh, it's really different. It's kind of embarrassing, but I like own the fact that it just was never like top of mind for me. I never had guidance on like, how do you buy a bond? How do you sell a stock? What is an equity versus, you know, about like we talked about this bond ladder, all these things. Like I remember, I think the way I would categorize it best is that a year and a half ago, I think I was fearful of not making a decision financially or another, whether that be like, I don't want to click buy with my brokerage, because what does that mean? And am I going to do it wrong? And what's the tax implications? And then, oh, I don't know if I want to sell or, you know, so there was like a ton of apprehension and fear really when it came to like financial decision-making and planning. And I also think some level of embarrassment, right? Because you're like, I'm really getting deep on this in, you know, my early 30s. And part of me definitely wishes I did this more so in my 20s, early 20s. But I also just think that there's tons of people out there. It's just because money is so taboo, people don't talk about it. And it's like it can be very vulnerable to go to someone and say like, I am 30 plus years old. I don't know what a bond is. And so I guess the way I would categorize it best is like, I just feel much more confident in my financial decision-making because I have a baseline understanding of how it works. Obviously, I'm not like a day trader. I'm not like a pro. But I know enough now where I can like confidently set myself up and my family up financially where that wasn't the case a year and a half ago.
I heard you talking about like tax optimization. You're bringing those phrases out with your father-in-law. Like you're pretty confident if you're using those phrases. Something that I think it would be interesting to hear is your perspective on the mindset that you had before the first call. And then the mindset after that first call to make it so that you wanted to keep calling.
Yeah. You know, it's a good question, Dan. I think the mindset before the first call was try to sound smart. You know, like I have questions, but I don't know. I would like prep for the call and be like, well, you know, and I would like try to sound smart and whatever. They would pick up on it. But then honestly, like towards the end of the calls, I'm just way more comfortable being like, I do not understand this thing. Like, just explain it to me. I don't get it. And then even if they explain it to me and there's like some jargon, I'll be like, I don't get that. Can you like do a double click on that? So that's like one pretty big mindset shift. I think the other one is that it's so advantageous to spend time on this. And it's not the case that you need to spend hours every day, like optimizing the portfolio and doing all these things, but like having a general sense of like where you're at, where you want to go, how to do those things in the interim is like so helpful. And it's just something you can't escape. Finance and health, it's going to impact you, you know? And so like the more that you can educate yourself in a way that you're more prepared and like confident, I just think it's so important.
You mentioned feeling like you didn't grow up knowing this, right? And that would be the majority of Americans. We know that within the household, personal finance isn't something that is talked about a whole lot. And we know that, especially in schools, whether that be K through 12 or even the university setting, personal finance really isn't brought up there. The government isn't really stepping in and leading the charge when it comes to financial education, financial guidance, and financial wellness. But luckily, we're seeing more and more employers kind of answer that call and step in and provide, you know, something like the coaching relationship that we have with you. So the question is, if you didn't have access to us, where would you go for this information?
Really good question. I mean, so I would have gone to my father-in-law. However, with that like comes some complexity, right? It's like your father-in-law, and it's hard to be vulnerable to most people, particularly to like your father-in-law, right? Of like, help me understand this, because you know you're supposed to have it figured out. Honestly, I think it would have been like, not even think of would have been. I mean, what I did is like Google searches, blog posts. Occasionally I would buy a book on personal finance, but even that, like, I think it's also learning style. Like that just didn't resonate with me. I wanted to talk to someone and ask those questions and push and better. And I think that's because of my like philosophy background, but that's where I would have gone. And like, unfortunately right now, essentially it's just like listicles online related to personal finance on like, you know, even if you looked up how to purchase bonds, I go back to that. You know, it'd be like, here are the top five things to consider, but it doesn't like actually answer the question or educate you on the mechanics of like the bond market and why this works and all these things that you're able to get from working with an organization like yours. And so, yeah, it just felt like very empty and very piecemeal, I think, prior to engaging with Financial Finesse.
I'm just relieved you didn't say TikTok.
That one actually... Yeah, I mean, luckily, no, that I'm like not susceptible. I think it's because I'm like too old, maybe. But yeah, that one I didn't. And for me, it would be Reels anyways. But yeah, TikTok, I see stuff on there sometimes and I'm like, I don't know. It's wild. I mean, I think there's some good stuff on there for sure. But then you have to be like very discerning as a consumer and someone that's just trying to learn this stuff. I think there's a lot better ways.
You brought up a really cool point of like your learning style. Your learning style, you like to talk it up. America, we are bad about talking about money. I remember like I grew up that there's three things that we're not supposed to talk about with other people. We're not supposed to talk about sex, not supposed to talk about politics, and you're not supposed to talk about religion. Money is so taboo that it's not even brought up as a taboo. So your learning style, you understood that you needed to call a complete stranger. I'm going to be on the other side of that phone. How did you feel like going into that conversation that you were about to talk to a complete stranger and start opening up about money?
It's a really good question. And so, interestingly, talking to a stranger in many ways was much easier because to some extent, it was just someone I was talking to that I didn't know. They didn't know me. And so the stakes were fairly low, right? Like, why would I care if so-and-so, oh gosh, this client called in, he didn't know what an equity was or when to sell or, you know, all the, like, it's like, that's bizarre. But you think about those things. And so I think there was some advantage to it, right? Where like, there's no shame in talking to someone who does this professionally and saying like, hey, look, I need help. Where I think when you're like talking to family and loved ones, it's just more complex, right? Because it's like you have feelings about them. They have it about you. You have this relationship there. You don't know how they're going to react. Like, I mean, people have like really visceral reactions to money and personal finance. And so, and then I also find that like in some ways it's similar to therapy in some regards, because I assume that Financial Finesse wants all their clients to do well. However, you know what I mean? It's like way more objective. It's like, it's not like, oh, you need to follow Dan's plan, 5-point plan, because that's what I followed. And if you don't, I'm going to think differently about you. It's like, no, I'll just like take you where you're at, help you answer these questions. And so anyways, I found that to be awesome about the experience.
Well, we love having you. So we're excited, especially now that you have possibly even some new questions around the financial aspect of parenting, kind of a new level of questions. So if we could wrap it up, just one final question is that we know your colleagues are going to listen to this, right? And they may be on the fence. Maybe it's embarrassment or maybe it's feeling like they already have it figured out. If you had a moment to just kind of give them a little bit of a nudge to make that first call, what would you say?
I think I would say that it's important thinking about, should I make this call or not? I think there's a natural tendency to think, oh, what will they think? What if the question's dumb? What if I don't articulate it well? Oh, this is so embarrassing. And then you just stop there and you're like, oh, I'm just not going to call. But I think it's really important to think about the upside of making the call. And the upside for me was better understanding where I was financially, putting a plan together, feeling good about that plan, I spoke with 13 different coaches, getting a ton of perspective. And I just think that it's important to consider what your skills and strengths are. And it's just so valuable to get the perspective of people that are experts in this that you just don't give the same amount of time and energy to, because it's not your job. And so I just see it as like such a tremendous value to be able to call an organization like this. And there's no limit. There's no like bad question, right? Or like it's only questions about homeownership or taxes or this or that. It's like, what I find so awesome is that you can really ask anything about personal finance. And so, long way of saying, in sum, thinking about the upside, I think, is so critical. Consider the downside, of which I think there's very little, but really thinking about the upside that it could really put you on a really solid financial footing.
Well, we are excited to see where you and your family progress from here. I was going to ask when we first started tonight if that was your baby picture, your baby in the background. I see you've got your little one's picture behind you. But Jonathan, thank you so much for coming. I think it's been quite a while since you and I originally met. And right off the bat, I was like, you've got to join us on the podcast. This would be fantastic. And then I saw, you know, how many other conversations you had, and Dan had been in the mix, and I've been excited to get Dan on the podcast as well. So Dan, thank you for joining.
Thanks, Julie, for having me.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was awesome. You all do great work. So really appreciate the opportunity and thanks for all the help.
So thank you for joining another episode of Financial Wellness at Work. We've got Dan Andrews with Financial Finesse. I'm Julie Everett with Financial Finesse. And our guest today, Jonathan, who continues to check in, make progress, learn tidbits about all the different areas of personal finance. And we welcome you to continue to listen in to the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Financial Wellness at Work podcast from Financial Finesse. Join us next time for more stories, inspiration, and tips on transforming your financial life and future.